Well, kia ora no tātou katoa. Ko tainei tātou ki te pito whakamuiti ngō tā tātou hui. He nui rau atu ngā kōrero, ngā whakaaro, ko puti wāinganui a tātou I inei rangi nei. Me mihi atu rā ki te papata whai, ki ngā kanohi huki o ngā iwi ko tai mai, tēnā kūtu katoa me o kūtou whakaaro. So, as it's fallen upon me to also provide the summary for today, and also for the hui overall. And I guess the first thing to say is what an extraordinarily rich set of discussions we've had the last 2 days. There was a tremendous amount. We had 13 presentations yesterday and another 6 today. And all of them were full of really important detail and perspective around various aspects, of course, of the Crown Māori relationship, the treaty relationship, Mātauranga Māori and so on. All of them, however, though, were distinguished by a profound commitment to the overall kaupapa of Crown Māori relationships, the treaty, the involvement of Mātauranga Māori, and the improvement of our relationship with the natural world. As I said yesterday, I think there were 5, and I think now 6 main themes in our discussions, and I'm going to offer these back to Joe and to Doc as the kind of the grouping themes around which all the presentations can be grouped. First of all, as I said, firstly, the key issue is the overall big picture question of the treaty relationship, Crown Māori relationships, and so on. As I mentioned, as we all know, Section 4 of the Conservation Act is the reason why we're here, but I really enjoyed the comment from the DOC representative from, I think, Westland down, I think it was you who said, of course, at the end of the day, it's not really the Section 4 of the treaty. We're here because it's the right thing to do, which is a lovely comment. So first, the first theme, I think, is this overall big picture theme of Crown Māori relationships, the treaty and so on. The second big picture theme is, therefore, what does this really mean for DOC and its set of complex relationships and its, I think Lou said 2,000 agreements, did I have that right? Inordinate number of agreements and relationships that that DOC has to deal with. Now, of course, it's not surprising that DOC has to deal with so many relationships, so many complex situations, so many dynamics, and it's obvious that one size is certainly not going to fit all. There will be many things perhaps we can share across those relationships, but there's an incredible diversity across those relationships throughout the country. So it's an unenviable task, really, a really huge, enormous challenge for DOC. But the thing is, it's the right thing to do, and it's really about nation building and really about Aotearoa of the future. The third thing is that, which is a big group of discussions that are grouped within the live examples, the case studies that we heard throughout New Zealand and Aotearoa. There were, I'm just mentioning a few of them, and I might have missed a couple, but here, the Rakiura Titi Islands, the Tapotoru Atoi, the Waikato Tainui Cultural Materials Plan, Taranaki Maunga, the Kaupoko Nui Stranded Whales Project, the Stranded Whales at Onetahua, Ngā Puke Ariki, Ngāti Kahununu ki Wairarapa, and Mōtatau. There might be one or two that I missed there, but we heard over the last day and a half, 2 days, we heard presentations of all of these different examples and case studies to do with how the DOC-IWI relationship is actually unfolding. We also heard, of course, 2 very important international examples, one from Canada and one this morning from South Australia. The first one was to do with a modern-day treaty and the outcomes of that process and the experiences and the journey of that process with that particular iwi or that tribe in Canada. And we heard this morning of the co-management arrangements with national parks in South Australia. Once again, the little video this morning we saw this morning was another beautiful, really captured the spirit, what we call the wairua, of that enterprise really, really well. Of course, all of these discussions were interleaved with discussions regarding the settlement of treaty claims. Treaty claims came in and out all the time throughout the discussions, but there was one presentation that was particularly about the settlement of a treaty claim, and that was Hami Piripi's presentation on the Te Tararua's claim. We also heard some really important discussions regarding the law, and particularly innovations in the law as they relate to the environment. Whanganui, of course, Te Uruwera, Taranaki, legal personality. And then finally, I want to add it really on the basis of the presentations that we've just heard from the group right at the end, he kuaka mā rangaranga, of the importance and the role and the contribution of rangatahi to these discussions. Everything, basically, they said were very important, and the involvement of rangatahi in all of these activities is absolutely critical, quite apart from they're clearly a very brainy group of people and very committed to these activities. Now, regarding this morning, let me just briefly touch on this morning. This morning's session began with Te Kei Merito, and I was really, really delighted. E reka ana te whakarongo ki a ia mō mumuhau rā o ko Takareto. These two manu that are well known in Tainui and Mātātua and Te Arawa tradition, they were said to have been placed on Orepanga or Kuvia Island, and it was wonderful to hear Te Kei talk about the journey of Mātātua and that the name of Orepanga actually comes from Muriwai's son. I did not know that. I come from that region of Hauraki, and I did not know that. I was really, really pleased to hear him talk a bit about that and the connection between Orepanga and the Tapatoru Ātoi, which he discussed yesterday, and we were able to see the video this morning of their work. He also mentioned the transfer of a tuatara as well. Then we heard the very brilliant presentation this morning from Glenys and Stuart regarding, entitled, I love this title, Strong People, Strong Country. It's a really beautiful, poetic title, and I love the way our Aboriginal cousins use that term, country. We don't use that word quite that way here, but it's a beautiful way of articulating. I think we really feel what was meant when you say, this is my country. The discussion was about the co-management of national parks and, of course, the journey that that Glenys' people have been on in terms of the well-known story of, you know, the colonisation of Australia, colonisation of New Zealand and other places around the world. We well know this and the terrible tragedies that befell our people in those times. And it's just the miraculous recovery, really, of our people through some very, very desperate and very, very difficult times. And it's really so heartening to see a modern-day generations of the same people. By the way, it's just so humbling. Also, we talk about you know, 600-700 years is a long time here, Glenys. But I just can't, you know, we just can't compare to the Aboriginal people of Australia. Just, oh my God, these people have been there for such a long time. But anyway, we heard this beautiful discussion this morning and presentation around the co-management of national parks and how the co-management of national parks in South Australia has been a vital mechanism or a vehicle for the restoration, the revitalisation of a people, and long may that continue. Lou then spoke on behalf of the Department of Conservation. He spoke about made a number of personal comments and thoughts, but also touched upon a number of what I think are his vision or his ideas of a legacy that he would like to leave inside the department when time comes for him to depart. You can clearly feel from Lou that both a personal and a professional commitment to this area. And I want to highlight that and acknowledge that, Lou, in your presentation this morning. You mentioned many, many different things about you know, the role of the CEO. You talked about partnerships with Ngaitahu. You mentioned Kevin Prime was the first person to import stoat traps. I didn't know that. You mentioned, of course, Hori Parata, Tikanga of Wales, Ngā Whenua Rāhui, 180,000 acres now under Kawenata, I believe, if I got that correct, Te Kawa o Te Uruwera. And we need more Māori staff, storytellers on the Tongariro crossing, so on and so forth. Legal personality is right up there with giving women the vote. It is that significant in the history of this country. We cannot achieve what we wish to achieve without quality engagement with our Māori treaty partner. I want to leave a legacy in this organization that integrates science and Mātauranga Māori. And I want to be able to foster the trust between the department and iwi and hapu whānau. I hope I heard you correct there, Lou. And I want to offer thanks to Māori staff and to the Māori treaty partner. We then heard... we heard from, if I've got this right, Hori Te Manu Taupunga, about the event in 2013, the stranding of whales at Kaupoko Nui, and what was a tremendously challenging experience for the local hapu there. Bonita was obviously the local hapu leader there. The tremendously challenging experience, but also the tremendous outcomes and value that came out of that. She mentioned things like the whanaungatanga, the knowledge, mātauranga, manaakitanga, these kinds of things that come about as a consequence of going through that quite, I'm sure at times, possibly traumatising experience of seeing so many whales stranded on the beach and then having to go through the process of figuring out what to do with them and then to inter them and all of that kind of thing. We were shared. We were given a glimpse of the work that Hori has done on developing protocols around the what happens when whales are stranded. What ought to take place? What is the right tikanga? What is the right ritinga? What is the appropriate way in which to bring peace to what is often a very difficult and profound and conflicted situation? The important outcomes of this activity included the power to heal relationships, kotahitanga, the importance of collective decision-making, the fostering of good relationships, and so much more. It flowed on to a number of other significant outcomes was the now sense of relationship between the people of South Taranaki there, Ngāti Tū, and Ngāti Wai. Ngāti Tū, Bonita said, look, we just absolutely didn't know anything at all, but we engaged with our Ngāti Wai people, and that was so helpful and so powerful and uplifting. And also that flowed on to a number of wānanga, maramataka wānanga, I think, which was said there, arts wānanga and so on. And one of the parawa was named Te Atawhai. Darren then spoke about Taranaki Maunga, another very ambitious project to do with getting all the community together in the conservation and care of Taranaki Maunga. The project objectives included securing the Maunga against pests, which are goats and other things, the restoration of species such as kiwi, toto, wai, kaka, and so on, and building a third objective was building community support, including particularly working with young people. Storytelling was critical. He mentioned regional investment, research opportunities, and also touched upon Ngamotu, the Sugarloaf Islands. He mentioned an aspiration about preventing the reinfestation of Taranaki Maunga without the use of a fence, which is interesting, and even a long-term aspiration of being able to achieve that without the use of 1080. But for now, 1080 is on the agenda, but in time, that's a really great aspiration. Well, then we had a group of scientists and their experiences with Mātauranga Māori. One was Ken Huey. He spoke about his experiences of being a scientist and walking through braided rivers. Told us a very, very funny joke. We all laughed about that. But he also was really frank and honest about, you know, when I was growing up and when I was doing my studies, I was doing a PhD, I had never heard anything about Mātauranga Māori or any of this kind of stuff. And now he's, of course, on this big journey of learning, of discovery about this stuff, and then potentially how it integrates with Mātauranga Māori or not. Jane mentioned a number of things. The very important quote about we do this because it's the right thing to do. She also mentioned how important the po in the department are, very, very important inside the department, and she also said in order for us to really do this well, we need the resources, internal capacity and capability to deliver upon our aspirations. We had a lovely presentation from Pa Rob McGowan, He was quite strident, I thought, on his views of Mātauranga Māori and his comments. I think his audience was to General New Zealand at various points, and his challenges to General New Zealand about hurry up and get on board with Mātauranga Māori and get over yourself and remove that chip on your shoulder and get into Mātauranga Māori. And he had some lovely comments to make. One that struck me was that we are all on a journey to make Aotearoa home. It just makes sense to talk to those who have been on the journey longest to figure out what it might be. So that was a nice comment. I also was taken by another comment or another remark that said that the first role of rongoā plants is to heal the land. My selfish human tendency is, oh, I thought it was to heal the person, was to heal me. He said, no. The first task of rongoā plants is to heal the land. Lovely quotes from Lally. I think it was Lally Haddon, I think you referring to there, Pa Rob. And also Sana, of course, the wonderful Sana from Te Opauri. Words about the land require the presence of the land. Mātauranga Māori, this is Pa Rob. Mātauranga Māori is knowledge of land from people who belonged to the land. Connection to whenua, he listed what he thinks were the critical aspects of Mātauranga Māori. Connection to whenua, it's a way of knowing not just a bunch of facts and figures and information about the world. It's a Māori way of keeping and passing knowledge. It's about survival through retaining connection to whenua. It's about keeping alive the stories of the land and feeding the Māori of the land. It's about the future, and the greatest responsibility we have is to future generations. Papatūānuku is the source of all life. If she is not well, we are not well. That is the standard by which we ought to measure the success of our decision-making and our actions, not the resource management law reform. Resource Management Act, I should say. The question was, will this help the land? Will this not help the land? Will this hurt the land? And much more in a rich presentation. Dan Hikuroa is a scientist by training, a geologist. He likes rocks, he tells me. He enjoys rocks. He's a rock star, I tell him. But, of course, in the last number of years now, Dan has been really getting right into Mātauranga Māori and seeing what has it got to say about the environment, and more particularly, I think, to do with whenua, given his interest in geology. He cited the example of Matata Marae and how... a particular marae in Matata, and how there was a flood there. And these marae were placed in very particular places, and the flooding never affected the marae. There was really good reasons why the people had placed their marae quite there, because they knew about flooding and they knew about other environmental events. Dan made some very important comments about how aspects of Mātauranga Māori are very much generally consistent with science, but explained from a Māori worldview. They involved a systematic methodology of observation, systematic observation of the environment. He touched upon a Mātauranga a whānau, a Mātauranga a hapū, which is very much localised because it grows out of the whenua. It's not a top-down knowledge system. It grows upward from the whenua, hence whānau hapū are very critical and very important. Interestingly, he said the pūrākau is a form of Mātauranga Māori that contains an epistemology and a code of ethics. They are not to be thought of merely as myths, but rather as guides for learning and explanations of landscape and phenomena. Maramataka too contains centuries of built-up evidence and observations involving constant verification, because if it didn't involve verification, it wouldn't have worked as a method for planting and for fishing and for living in the world. It was constantly observed, constantly applied, constantly observed, and constantly updated through verification and so on. He also mentioned about the wonderful thing that is in Mātauranga Māori is the sense of the revelation of knowledge. And I don't mean Christian revelation. I mean the sense of actually the answers are right there. You just simply need to know how to go into the whenua and into the environment and read it. It's all right there. You just need to be in the psychological space to allow yourself to be taught by the world, or the spiritual space to be allow yourself to be taught by the world. He talked about how looking at the same thing but with different people looking at the same thing but with different things in their minds. Not everybody is conscious that other people have different things in their minds. Finally, he touched upon the idea of a Tonga Relationships Act. Joe Landro offered some thoughts regarding his reflections upon his experiences, his adventure, I might say, Joe, with the Department of Conservation, and how things are going along there, and that Joe's role has been about assisting Doc in a period of change. He does see a commitment in Dr. Iwi Partnership to be a trusted partner. He hears lots of advocacy of each of the knowledge systems, but he's wondering about the danger of the context forcing us to choose. So there's lots of advocacy from a scientific point of view, there's lots of advocacy from a mātauranga Māori point of view, but I think the critical thing I think he's highlighting from these discussions is that we need to be aware that circumstances may be forcing us to choose when in fact that may not necessarily be the best decision. Successful organisations harness the power of the and the opportunity of the and labouring under the tyranny of the or, if I've got that right. The challenge of integrating mātauranga Māori into DOC, blah, 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 the power of true listening, recognising the importance of each iwi relationship. Each relationship is unique, has its own complexity and so on. One size does not fit all. A genuine inquiry, the need to share each other's worlds was a lovely comment. It needs to be given time and space. Relationships are not things that can be created overnight and expected to bear the weight, you might say, of what the relationship is trying to achieve. They need to be time and space to grow them. And finally, I haven't touched on all the points, but finally he did mention the problem of self-imposed limits. People and organisations do create artificial barriers, do create things in their minds that we couldn't do that or possibly do that or even think of doing that and so on. And he asked the question, how much headroom is untapped in what is already existing, what is already there? So then we got to the final session, was the rangatahi session, and it might be worthwhile to think about having our rangatahi session right at the very beginning, Joe, given the clarity of the thinking around some of the issues that they presented and also the energy and commitment they bring to these issues. Of course, this group called He Kuaka Marangaranga have recently been overseas and had fantastic experience with the United Nations, which, of course, crystallised the thinking and focused the thinking onto some critical ideas. It was a group of 12, but it looks like Kuhu Kuaka Marangaranga has grown to be 300. And they have three, if I've heard this correctly, they've had three really important big picture themes or objectives. Papa Tuanuku, that was constantly referred to throughout, placing Papa Tuanuku at the centre of things, constitutional transformation and health. Mana Virko was from Rotorua Boys High, and he talked about legal personality and mentioned that this was a good first steps. He mentioned the models or the example of Evo Morales in Bolivia and what has been happening inside Bolivia as a potential model for us here in Aotearoa. Te Wehi returned and reinforced this point about... he made the point that the conservation of the environment may not be so dissimilar from the conservation of identity. If you think of yourself as the environment as your identity, therefore they're one and the same. Ngā Rauira came to this stage and talked about setting natural targets for river restoration. This was a set of recommendations the group had created. Secondly, to address the climate crisis, to ask the government to cease investment in any kind of fossil fuels, the example particularly through things like KiwiSaver. And the final one was a constitutional change, which of course puts Papa Tuanuku and the Treaty of Waitangi at the centre. Rangipare, of course, offered a moving presentation regarding Otakiri Springs And it was marvelous to see her also present that in, I believe, in Geneva. And it is a kind of the ongoing issue of the corporatization of the resources of the natural world and how this is, continues to drive a wedge between people and environment, and particularly indigenous peoples and the environment in our places that are important to us. Ngā Rauira returned and spoke about the next steps for the group was to gather Māori leadership of tomorrow, that's the collectivising of young Māori leaders, and the idea of having an Indigenous Leadership Forum in 2020, if I heard that correctly. And finally, Te Wehi concluded by saying that there's a real sense of urgency required. I think we really feel that. He's underlining this point of there's a sense of urgency required to put Papa Tūnuku at the front. So we heard quite a number of really important presentations this morning. I haven't captured all of the ideas and all the thoughts that were expressed today, but you can clearly see that there's an amazing, because I'm a musician, I think in musical terms often. There was a tremendous symphony unfolded today with many, it's like a 16 movement symphony with all of the different highways and byways and movements and expressions and so on, the dynamics throughout the entire 2 days. I want to leave you with just two final remarks, which I was supposed to say yesterday and I completely forgot all about it, but just two final remarks. One is, in various presentations I do around Aotearoa, particularly to Māori communities, but to Aotearoa generally, is that I use the metaphor of the waka, and that as we ascend the mast of creativity and innovation, of looking for new possibilities, of striking out to new horizons, of risking and trying different things, of failing occasionally, and going into discovering new possibilities and new taonga. As we go ascend up the mast of our innovation and creativity, we need to make sure that the keel is reaching deeper and deeper and deeper into the waters of our pre-existing knowledge, of our history, of our culture, of our identity. Really important that we feel balanced. As we continue to move forward, we also have had deeper and deeper and deeper into the waters of our pre-existing knowledge. And one final thing is I just want to quickly recount a tradition from the Taitokorau regarding Te Tiriti o Waitangi. This was a tradition that was fostered inside the Taitokorau and was given to me by the late Reverend Māori Marsden. And it speaks to a very deep set of ideas about what the Treaty of Waitangi actually represents. And I just want to leave it with you this afternoon because the treaty is ultimately why we are here today, and because it is the right thing to do. The treaty is finally why we're here. The Taitokorau has a lot of really wonderful expressions and ideas and thoughts regarding the treaty. But this is the statement that goes like this. Ko ahe rā e kite ai te tumu whakarai, te kaipaihere e te etsi me te rahi. Me ako a tātou tamariki he kawanata te tiriti o Waitangi. Ona pūtaketake he rangatiratanga, he manaakitanga, he whanaungatanga, he tohungatanga, he ukaipō. O ti rā kaitua ko te akamatua, tōna ingoa ko te kotahitanga. Kia ora tātai.